Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University, it's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practices. With the modern gurus that somehow make this magic seem easy, it's Cindy Greenglass. How are you? You have your wizard hat on today here. I noticed
it. Hello. Yeah. I don't know about the guru part.
Well, you guys are. You know, you're really, for years and years and years, marketing was what I grew up in. It was the creative side of the equation here. Now it seems to be have swung the other way with the scientific analytical side of the equation. It's all measurement, but it really is still a blend of the two, isn't it?
Well, when I took the IMC program at West Virginia University, and I'm a data geek, and right. And I had to take creative best practices, and I said, gosh, I'm not creative. I'm going to be terrible at this. And I remember my instructor saying to me, remember what Einstein said, creativity is intelligence having fun.
Ooh, I like that. I'm going to use that one. Yeah.
You see, so we're all creative, just in our own unique ways. And I'm thrilled that today we have a really interesting speaker joining us to talk about creativity in UX, user experience platforms, which again, you might say is technology, not necessarily creativity. This is going to be terrific. Our guest is going to be Molly Gilmore. She is a fellow colleague and professor at West Virginia University. She teaches user experience platforms, which is something I know nothing about, and is owner of Blue Jeans, as in your jeans, not the jeans you wear, Media, which is pretty cool, a consulting business in New York City that focuses on user experience design and product development. And I really need to take her class because I think this is pretty cool stuff. In her business, Molly combines her background in science and engineering with her love of design. So, Paul, like you said, creativity now is a blend of science, it's art and science, it's left brain, right brain, it's a lot of different things. And we're really fortunate that Molly is joining us. In addition to her consulting, her background includes 20 years in software and product design, companies like Microsoft and Intuit, big, big names. She's also had endeavors recently in data mining applications, visual design at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. We got a real smart person here with us, and Molly does consulting on 3D modeling and animation, and I'm just blown away by her credentials. She's got a master's in bioinformatics, a master's in engineering, and she has a BA in French. So we got the Renaissance woman. Molly, welcome to our show today.
Oh, hello. Cindy, thank you so much for the introduction. I'm so happy you invited me onto your program today.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. And we're going to spend over the next half hour talking about UX design as the link between old and new technologies, kind of at a start. And before we go any further, would you define UX for us in your terms? What does it mean to you, and what should our listeners know about that term?
So that's a good place to start, because you hear it everywhere and it's interpreted differently based upon the context. The theme that's consistent across domains has to do with focusing on the quality of the way a user interacts with any product, service, interface, and whether or not you're meeting the user needs, and if you've considered more than just the usability, the user's emotional perspective, the safety of the user, and on top of that, for most designers, you're also considering their overall business goals. So for a lot of people, it's fascinating because there's multiple things you need to consider, multiple techniques. So it's challenging, but it's rewarding because if you can come up with a solution that not only addresses the user needs, but ultimately facilitates the business goals, you feel like you've done something positive.
Wow, that is just fascinating that we're now bringing emotion, and so it's not just eye tracking anymore, right? The old-fashioned, heat mapping when you did websites and you did some, eye tracking and you thought you figured it out, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. But I think what eye tracking doesn't give you, at least yet, maybe with the introduction of AI, it'll start, you know, being able to derive more information from data elements that you gather or measurements that you gather, but it doesn't tell you why. And if you think of the diversity of humans and their experiences, I think it still comes back to understanding the human aspect of how a person responds to their environment, and whether it's software they're using at home or software they're using in their workplace, what they need to complete their goal typically does include their opinions and their emotional needs.
So let's talk a little bit about how UX now is being focused on designing for new products. You hear a lot of this with new product development. That makes sense because we're entering into a new phase and you want to know how all of this holistically would be considered. But how can you use UX design and relate it to older technologies? How are you bringing the old and the new together?
Okay, that's a great question. So as a UX designer, I'm frequently presented with challenges that relate to working with imperfect systems. And often one of the root issues of these imperfect systems is a component of technology that's old or outdated or not connected. And these situations typically occur when we're designing software for people that work within complex systems. These people, or users as a designer terms them, need to interact with a mix of technology, both software and hardware, as well as complete manual procedures as part of their overall workflow. So if you think about healthcare, life sciences, and manufacturing domains, this is where this scenario typically occurs.
Why do you think that this is really an important topic for us to understand and discuss, the blending of this new technology and old technology and linking user experience and design? Why should we care about this? I kind of think when you said, for sure, medicine, engineering, highly complex or technical fields, do we need to concern ourselves with this in some of the non-technical environments?
Well, sure. So again, in my current business, I tend to work in these other domains where there is complexity. But as an individual, think about it, the complexity of the interface of the controls in your car. The complexity of shopping for food when you have a phone in your hand, someone's calling from work, and you have a baby in the basket. I mean, there's all types of ways where, because of tight time frames and budget, we focus on a singular task, but we don't look at the whole context. And one of the themes throughout this discussion is that UX designers, I mean, my background is software, but frequently in coming up with solutions that are able to create a reasonable environment for the user to do what they need to do, you're working both within software and with things that are not software related. I can give you more examples. As you mentioned, some of the most identifiable solutions do occur with healthcare. I mean, we've all heard statistics about the sometimes tragic impact of mistakes made in healthcare settings, and the same thing holds true for other areas, even manufacturing. And one thing I wanted to point out is as we move to improve these situations or these systems through technology, we sometimes forget that we've asked the user to be the one that stitches together individual pieces of technology that are not yet compatible.
So how do businesses bring that technology up to date? How do they wrestle with legacy systems they still need to maintain, but bring up the technology? Maybe they don't even have the wherewithal to know how to tackle it. I can understand you don't want the consumer or the audience to have to figure that out. Where do you start as a business?
Well, so there's valid reasons why a business may not be able to upgrade their entire system. I mean, there's the cost, both of the technology and the cost to change operational procedures. And then there's other times they're responding to outside forces. So for example, I've worked in manufacturing situations where there's OSHA regulations put in place and the timeframes are immutable and very restrictive. And so the business doesn't have time to upgrade the whole system. So I think the theme of this conversation is this is a place where UX designers can play a role. Now, traditionally, in other disciplines, you hear of things like system engineering. Like, systems engineers may work to design the most intuitive and fast exit from an airplane, things like that. But I think as we see technology become omnipresent, some of those techniques have evolved to be more applicable to all types of environments. Again, the businesses, when they're going through any type of system upgrade, the role of a UX designer can help create positive and beneficial interim solutions as they work towards the more perfect, you know, full system, comprehensive system implementation that's in the future.
So we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, and I'd like you to think about this question, Molly, so that when we come back, you might be able to address this for us. Share with us and our listeners some of the research and design techniques that you and your clients have been able to leverage in specific situations. So maybe you can give us a challenge that they were trying to overcome, or even if it was a new product that they were implementing. That's kind of cool about the exiting, getting on and off an airplane. I'm always fascinated by that. Southwest Airlines has the ABC. Every airline seems to have a slightly different way of doing it, whether they do the window first, the aisle last. I would assume that all of that, like you said, is part of a engineering process and some level of scientific discovery. Let's take a look at in your world how you use that research plus design techniques and how it's been leveraged in a real world situation. While you think about that, so we're going to pause for a minute, and Paul's going to tell us a little bit more about WVU, right, Paul?
You got it. For those of you who are fascinated by these conversations and want to hear more, there is a way that you can become a part of this whole program. It's West Virginia University's online data marketing communications program, first graduate program of its kind in the country. They focus on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making, and the kind of fascinating cutting-edge subjects like we're talking about today. The Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University prepares you for your career by learning the innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those we're discussing today. Learn more. You just got to memorize 9 letters like I have. DMC for Data Marketing Communications. DMC.WVU for West Virginia University.edu. DMC.WVU.edu. If you can do that, you can master their master's program. Okay, back to Cindy and her guest.
You see how easy that is? You too can become a data scientist, a brilliant designer, and blend them together to really make magic happen. And no wizard hat required.
I love it. Okay.
So, Molly, but before we took a break here for Paul, I asked if you would be able to share with us how UX research and design techniques have been leveraged, and maybe share some specific situations with us. It would be great if you don't mind.
Sure. I'll paint a picture of one typical scenario, and then how we've used UX design research, design and research methods to accomplish the challenge presented to us. So if you think about any type of lab situation, a staff member may come in and learn about their work order for the day from one computer system. They may move on to work with test tubes or a microscope or some other physical device. They may have to enter test results in to a computer. And there may be a reporting system that, because it's been QA'd and validated to meet regulations, is rather immutable in terms of changing the design and may not have any API application programming interfaces that allow us to connect electronically to get data. So there's a challenge. And if you're a UX designer brought in to add another software component to the mix, the last thing you want to do is make the system more complex. Here, research. And again, this is where data you get from research, the humanness to actually look and communicate with the user, and then design all come together. So if you think about it, you want to look at the user and not only speak with them, but observe them in their work environment. What are what are their distractions? What are their habits? Have their habits been formed for great reasons, meaning they're so skilled and efficient that they've created habit around the way they do something? Or is their habit created for not such a great reason because they've had to do a workaround for an imperfect interface? User task analysis that includes detailed identification of data flows is really important step to take. And this type of analysis may extend beyond how the user interacts with computer applications. To take one step back, I want to emphasize that the one thing I've learned, and to be honest with you, like everything, you learn through doing the work. That's really how you craft a lot of your design techniques. And what I've learned is that it's great to incorporate techniques from other design methodologies. So obviously, implementing software, there's human-computer interaction, but there's the ergonomics of it. Does the user have to traverse from one end of the lab to the other to enter data? There's the cognitive psychology aspect of it. Think about it. If a user has to move from one application to the other, do they have to carry information between the applications in their mind? And have we asked them to exceed the normal amount of information they can keep in their head? And that raises the potential for not only mistakes, but for people to be unhappy when they come to work. Doing the research and then really documenting the detailed data flows is an important set of steps to take to make the change on an interim basis that not only doesn't add complexity, but helps to reduce complexity and redundancy. And then the one opportunity a UX designer has at this point in time is if you've really documented the data flows and user scenarios, you've set the environment up to be ready to quickly feed into the requirements when the new, like, perfect system, I guess nothing's ever perfect, but better system can be put in place.
So one of the takeaways I'm hearing from this, when I look at it as a marketer, a lot of this is very interesting behind the scenes that I don't ever see. As a marketer, we look at obstacles to the communication, obstacles to the yes, and to the where we want to take a conversation and a narrative, and we talk about friction marketing, what gets in the way of the consumer, the customer experience, and how do we psychologically remove resistance so that the customer, the visitor, the prospect experience is not stopped, right? So friction is kind of a conversion killer in marketing. It creates a level of doubt, and it can stop us from achieving the action that we are looking to do. Would you see user experience design as entering in from a marketer standpoint? How do I remove friction from the marketing communication, from a website, from an engagement? Is there an application there in marketing?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, when you hand off from marketing to development, there's that role for the UX designer in between. And what's really great is over the years, my class, we, as a foundational concept, we talk about personas. And it used to be kind of strict division between marketing segment definition and UX personas. But now they really overlapped. And that really makes sense because you're all focused on providing the best, most competitive experience for the user. It's just different roles to play to do that. But the exchange of data between those roles is key, and the timing of the exchange of that data. So, for example, on one hand, a marketer may know that in order to compete with another business, the speed of turnaround for whatever the service the business is providing is key. So they're already a stakeholder in the operational aspect of the business. But then, and the marketer can help prioritize which aspects of the system are addressed first. So they know what the competitive landscape is. They're knowing which segments are their target, the ones that bring in the most revenue, and what their priorities are. So the challenge is to not only facilitate that communication in a way that can cross organizational teams, but the timing of it. If there's an ongoing conversation or the conversation with marketing on what data and metrics they need out of the system on the back end before the system is modified or developed, that's really important because one of the biggest challenges I think everyone knows, even consumers at home when you're working with applications on your laptop, trying to translate from one system to the other at the data element level is frequently one of the greatest hurdles to making major improvements in a system.
Just going from my phone to my computer. I get a text and I see it on my phone and I want to go to my laptop, and it can be very challenging. We're going to be winding up here in just a few minutes, and I think I have time for one more question. And Molly, what I'd like to do is toss it over to you and say, you know, I've been asking all the questions. Is there something I didn't ask or address? And would you like to share with our listening audience as we wind up our short time together?
Sure. I mean, the one thing I wanted to emphasize is that I think UX designers are always striving for the best experience, and often that is newer technology. But sometimes that newer technology is on the horizon, and what we don't want to do, and sometimes you see it often, we don't want to ask the user to wait a year or two with a really unbearable solution. So what I'm advocating for is designing for the interim and take that opportunity to put the extra effort in to try and pave the way for the ultimate solution. The other thing I want to say is that some of the more recent technologies that are not omnipresent yet but are really showing up is artificial intelligence and virtual reality. The latter is more expensive other than entertainment, but for the workplace it's really kind of expensive to develop, so it's not as common. But I think those technologies are going to appear more and more. And the thing is AI may be the smart tool that helps bridge technologies without asking the user to do anything. But if history is a predictor of the future in any way, the introduction of that technology is going to be incremental. And whenever you have incremental adoption of technology, you have a hybrid solution. And so again, when you have the hybrid solution, design for the user for the here and now, and hopefully you're going to be doing it systemically and methodically so that the future comes sooner than you think.
It's very good advice. We can't boil the ocean. So start with the short term, think for the long term, and know that it's all going to evolve. And technology's changing, and we're changing with it. So thank you, Molly, for your time today, for joining us on our WVU podcast. I hope that I'll see you on campus or online soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.